Guess you, Michael's getting a little bit behind on preparing for class, so he needed this time to get ready for the classes today and tomorrow. And so it's a lot of work if you don't know, if you haven't seen him sitting in the back preparing for class. It's a lot of work to get up on stage and try and teach something, so he needs a little bit of time. So we'll do a little meditation together and, you know, see what happens. Does anybody have any questions? Like, you're meditating and you can't meditate because you got this, like, blazing question and it won't leave you alone and it just bothers you and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody? Okay. So then we'll just start. There is one. Oh, okay. Hi. Yeah. Yeah, sure. I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't. That's football and traveling are my two main obstacles to meditation. So. Yeah, because, you know, I think we talked a little bit yesterday, right? And Dennis, I think, talked about it. Where's Dennis? Dennis. One of the things that helps the most with your meditation is if you can do it at the same time, you know, and in the same place, it, like, you build up an energy, you know, which helps you do your practice. So what if you can't do that? You know, what if you have to be somewhere all the time, or your schedule's irregular, or, for example, you have to get on a plane? And there's a couple things I've come up with that help me, and the main thing I think is I do a lot of Mahamudra meditation, because the advantage of Mahamudra is that they say the biggest advantage of Mahamudra is you're watching your mind. So if you're watching your mind and then your mind starts thinking about something else, you should notice, you know, because you're looking at your mind. So when I find that, like, I can't do my regular meditation because of the traveling, or I'm too tired, or, like, things are not going the way I want, then I have a tendency to fall back on the Mahamudra meditations. Because, you know, then, again, if it is the problem that I'm so distracted because of all the traveling I can't focus, then that's like an automatic kind of antidote to it. So, and, you know, Geshe Michael taught a whole course on Mahamudra, so if you ever want more detail or depth or something like that, you can get them online or ask anybody here. Okay. Anything else? Okay. We'll just do, like, three short meditations, I think, and break them apart so that you don't have to sit too long, because I don't know what people's ability is, how long you can sit or how long you regularly sit. So we'll try and sit for as much as we can, but then break it up a little bit for people that aren't used to having long meditations. So the first thing we always do is the breath meditation, right? So you're just gonna, we'll just breathe out, breathe in, and try to count to 10. And if you breathe in, breathe out, and start thinking about pizza, then you just start back at 1. So, and the idea always with us is that breath meditation's not the goal. In the Tibetan tradition, you would always meditate on an object which has some virtue to it, because then you're also collecting good seeds when you meditate and not just meditating. So we'll do that next. But this meditation is really good for what Geshe Michael calls putting your mind into neutral. So if, like, you got some bad news this morning, or your drive here was crazy, or all those kind of things, now your mind's going nutso. So you start with a breath meditation, and it puts you back into a neutral space where you can be more successful. So when you're ready, I like to do 3 cycles of it. So you breathe out, breathe in, count 1, and do a couple iterations of that. And there are different breath meditations you can do, but this one is just watching the breath, counting them. So don't feel like you're not trying to control your breath. You're not trying to control your breath in any way. You're just watching and counting. And like we talked about, if your mind leaves the object, you know, your mind starts to hear the compressor outside, or your mind hears some noise, and you think, you just notice the noise, and you say, oh, there's a noise. And then you say, oh, I wonder what the breath sounds like. And you just bring your mind back to the object. And if the mind leaves, just gently bringing it back. Okay, good. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Any questions about that? It's pretty simple, right? So if you want to stretch a little bit, feel like you have to move around. There's an upside and a downside to meditating in groups. The upside is that if everybody works hard and everybody meditates together, then everybody lifts everybody else up. Like the energy of everyone trying to meditate together everyone supports each other, and it can take you to a higher meditation. What's the downside? Yeah, if you sniffle and sneeze and cough and move around and wiggle, then you distract everybody. So if we, for example, believed in seeds, then maybe the most important thing you could do during a meditation would be to not move, because what would you be doing? Well, if you're not moving, right, then you're planting a seed of not disturbing other people's meditation, right? And that's something that we would theoretically want, right? So even if I can't meditate because my nose is running, it might be a bigger deal, or it might be better for me, right, to just let my nose run, because then I can think about how cool it is and I'm collecting the seed of not sniffing and bothering somebody else. And then that would be maybe the more powerful thing to do. And then that being said, of course, like, it's really important how you sit. You know, if your knees are uncomfortable, then you're not going to be able to meditate. So sit some way that's comfortable for you, right? You don't have to feel like you're going to be in lotus, or like, I can't do lotus, I'm a loser. Like, none of those things are important. It's much more important to sit and be comfortable and be able to meditate than be thinking, God, my knee hurts. One. Like, that's not as useful. So, you know, be kind to yourself also. No questions?
No questions.
Okay.
So when I watch the breath, I get to a certain place of distraction that I feel is okay. Like, okay, I'm distracted this much, and then I feel...
It's my regular place of distraction?
Yeah, exactly. And then I feel a little complacent, and then I think I'm not getting past that.
Yeah.
Then I was thinking, well, how much control do I really have to push myself in the meditation in that moment?
Yeah, good. Good. You offered me an excellent diamond deal. If you're going to offer me a diamond deal, that was like the best one I've heard like in a long time. Yeah, right? So the answer is plant seeds, right? So I shouldn't be complacent. So the way I try not to be complacent with my meditation, right, is at some point during the meditation, we'll do it next, that'll be the next thing we do, right, is work on your motivation, right? Because if your motivation is good, your meditation will never be good enough, you know, until it is. So if I feel that I'm not working very hard on meditation, then it's because I'm not thinking enough about other people, right? If I thought about how, you know, like, the example I use is every time I talk to my mom on the phone, she, like, tells me about, you know, they just took a cyst off my neck and they tested it and it's malignant, or my knee hurts and I can't go to work, or, you know, I have to have my eye operated on now because, you know, I can't see at night, you know. So then I try to think about that a little bit. Like, if it's possible that this is all coming from me, then that means, you know, I'm just not helping enough people. And if I help more people, then I would get a different call from my mom, you know. So then if I have that in my mind when I start my meditation, then I don't feel that I don't try hard enough, you know. That being said, you're totally right. You can't control the moment. Like, you know, if I get off a plane, I can think about my mom all I want, and I still can't meditate very well. So, you know, yeah, you just have to work with it. But, yeah, I always think the main thing is just work on my motivation, you know. And a lot of times I see my meditation practice as the means, maybe the best means that I have to, like, you know, work on my motivation. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I get that, too, a little bit, where the minute I let go a little bit of the breath, I get to another space where I'm like, I think I know what you're talking about. And then I'm like, oh, now I'm in it. And so I'm kind of watching the breath, but I'm kind of not watching the breath.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you know, right and wrong aren't really questions I ask myself all that much. You know, everybody here knows right and wrong, like, don't hurt people. So then the question is, like, what's the best way to plant the seed? Come off. What's the best way to plant the seed that I want? And so then the books say, right, that actually it's not the seed that you want to let you to switch your meditation or switch your object during your meditation. So, like, you know, I'll use an easy example, you know, like, so if I'm doing Mahamudra meditation, maybe. And then I start to think about the Buddha, you know, or my Lama or something. And then your mind tries to tell you, like, oh, it's okay. It's the Buddha. You're supposed to think about the Buddha, right? And you're like, oh, okay, maybe I should think about the Buddha for a while. No, your mind just tricked you. Your mind gets, you know, the more and more you work at it, the sneakier and sneakier your mind gets. So you have to watch out for him. He's always trying to, like, try to pull a fast one on you. So, yeah, I mean, the goal of doing that meditation is to get into a space where you feel meditative. So then that's a good thing, right? But if you lose the object, that's a bad thing. So what you should do is, like, set it up ahead of time. You know, I'm going to, like, say I'm going to do 3 cycles of counting to 10, or 2 cycles, or 10 cycles, or however many it is, and then don't break off before you hit the end of what you said you were going to do. And then if you learn that, oh, I'm getting in my meditative space faster than 3 cycles, then you can make it shorter. You know, okay, today I'm only going to do 2, you know, because it's coming, that meditative feeling is coming faster, you know, or today I just got off a plane, so today I'm going to do 7, you know, and then like that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, the first question was, how do I meditate when, what was it, when I travel? Yeah, how do I meditate when I travel? And then this was, how do I know if I'm trying hard enough, basically, I think? Like, you know, if, don't touch that. because you can get complacent. It's easy to get complacent. And then this one was something like, how do I tell the difference between being meditative and sneaking off my object and being meditative? So, like that. Okay, anything else?
Can you meditate? Like, let's say you're on a cross-country flight or something, just taking a long time. Can you meditate on a plane, or does it have to be a perfect setting, or a quiet, or, you know, whatever? Can you cut out those distractions and use some of that time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so can you meditate on a plane? Can you meditate on a plane? Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, and in general, can you meditate when circumstances aren't ideal? I mean, really, right? And then I have to say yes, because most of the time I meditate, circumstances aren't ideal. If I needed ideal circumstances to meditate, then it would never happen. So, yeah, on a sliding scale of, like, can you meditate when there are birds outside making noise versus, like, on a plane where, like, it's really distracting. You know, there's, like, airplane engines and people coming by and, you know, movement and lots of other people and people talking and the whole thing. So, if you reach the goal of meditation, then you can meditate wherever and whenever you want. Like, you could be in the middle of a hurricane, you know, or an earthquake or something, and decide you're going to meditate, sit down, and then you go inside your mind. And, you know, they say, like, one of the example Geshe Michael likes to use is when you can meditate really well, somebody could, like, come up to you and wave a French fry under your nose, and you wouldn't smell it. Because you have pratyahara, you can withdraw all the senses, you know, when you meditate. So that being the case, then, for me, like, when I'm on a plane, and I do sometimes try to meditate on planes, because if we have to leave early in the morning and we're going to get somewhere and then we're going to arrive and they're going to pick us up in a car and then they're going to want to talk to us because they haven't seen us in a year and then they're going to be really excited, then on the plane might be the only time I have to meditate that day. So I don't really have a choice. So for me, when it's a circumstance like that, then again, I use the Mahamudra meditation again, because what you do, well, then the way I would start it off is you take the distraction as your object. Like, you know, okay, there's an airplane engine making a lot of noise. I'm going to meditate on that. Let me see if I can tune the other things out and just hear the airplane engine. And then if I've got my mind just listening to the airplane engine, then you can do what Geshe Michael talked about yesterday. You can move to your eardrums. Like, okay, now I'm hearing the sound as it hits my ear of the airplane engines. Okay, now, and then you just can keep going inside. And if you don't get any further than that, that's fine. Like, if you never get any farther than just meditating on the airplane engine, that's also okay. Because what are you doing? Yeah. Yeah, I always make a joke. When I teach my DCI group, like, I always ask them questions, and they sit there and stare at me, and I'm like, look, it's easy. Just say planting seeds. Like, pretty much that's always going to be the right answer. Like, any question I ask you, if you say planting seeds, that's the right answer. So, like, even if you have the worst meditation in the world, like, you only, like, I always tell people, so if I sit down to meditate sometimes when I'm traveling, right, I'm trying to focus on the airplane engine, I start listening to the lady that's really annoying, like, yelling at her kid, and then I hear the cart go by, and I start thinking how I want, you know, some orange juice. And then my mind goes, but you were supposed to be thinking about the airplane engine. That's the seed that I wanted. You know, that's the seed that I sat down to get. So if even, you know, if I meditate for like 45 minutes and I only do that once in 45 minutes, I still get up and I feel like I did what I wanted to do. Because I planted a seed of putting my mind back on the object. And then sometime in the future, if I take care of other people, that seed has to ripen, you know. And that's what I wanted, so. Okay. Is there a clock somewhere? I'm not sure. Is my watch that Mira keeps fixing for me that I broke again, is it accurate? Okay, when am I supposed to stop? 10:30, right? Okay. Yeah, this... Can you fix my watch? Yeah. Okay, so we'll do the seven limbs, because that's the next thing you're supposed to do, right? To meditate, to get my mind in a virtuous state. So the breath meditation brings me to neutral, and then the seven limbs is supposed to, you know, collect some virtue, sokjang, right? Collect and clean, so that now I have a chance to be able to meditate. So, take your comfortable cross-legged position. When you're ready, close your eyes. Maybe just for a minute, then again, watch the breath. So this one is another one that I like to do, is you just watch the breath as it goes in and out of the nostrils. So now we're not counting, you're watching the tip of the nostril, and you're just watching feeling the breath as it goes out. And then you feel the breath on the nostrils as it comes back in. Okay, good, nice. And then the first step is to go for refuge. So there's lots of different ways you can do this. Today, maybe let's think about our motivation. Think about what we're trying to do. You know, why do I sit down to meditate? What is it that I'm hoping to accomplish? You know, what seed am I hoping to plant? What change am I hoping to see in the world? And then whatever seed it is that I'm hoping I might get, whatever that change is I'm hoping to create, I really can't do it without my Lama. So then I invite my Lama to come and sit in front of me, to meditate with me. And then we always say the main thing is that you're not imagining that your lama has come. Your lama has the power to come and meditate with you. So they are. They do. And if you don't have a lama, then you just imagine someone that that you admire, that you respect. And then it could be anyone. And then next, you're supposed to prostrate. And what that means is to think of one of those good qualities. Think of one of their good qualities, because to think of their good qualities is to bring yourself closer to it. So imagine or think of one of the reasons why you took this person to be your teacher, and think about that. And then if you have that in your mind, if you have that in your heart, then naturally, right, you would want to make them some offering. You would want to give them something. You would want to help them in some way. So the different kinds of offerings are, you can imagine physical things, or you can imagine mental things. If you imagine a mental thing, then the highest thing to think of is your practice. So think of something that your lama told you, and try and remember some time that you did what they asked, that you practice what they taught, and then make an offering of that. And then if you offer the thing that you did do, it might occur to you there was something that you didn't do. So then maybe this time try and think of something that your lama asked you to do and you didn't do, or some teaching they gave you and you couldn't apply it, or you didn't apply it. And then freely, openly, in the spirit of becoming a different person, not because I'm a bad person, but in the spirit of wanting to be a different person, wanting to make a change in myself, then I freely offer that I made this mistake. And then I offer it to the teacher and I say, help me with this. Help me clean this away so that I could be a different person, the person I want to become. And then free of that mistake, I can have joy. So then take some joy in something that you did, something different than what you offered, some kind thing that you did for somebody in the last 24 hours, some consideration maybe that you had for someone else. And then try and be really happy about that. Have joy about it. Realize that because you're doing those things, your world is going to change. It is going to start to look different. And revel in that. Play in it. And then we also have the chance to rejoice in the things that we see other people do. So there's lots of people running around here right now doing a lot of amazing things. So try and pick one if you can. And rejoice in what they're doing. Feel happy about what they're doing. Feel happy that what they're doing is also going to make a change in the world. Then you can ask your teacher to keep teaching you. They might keep spreading the teachings in the world. And then I like to add to myself that I think sometimes the Lama is giving me teachings and I can't hear them. Like I'm missing the teaching somehow. Like maybe everything that's going on around me all the time is a teaching and I'm just not able to see it. So then I ask them, can you bless me to see the teaching? That not only will you keep giving the teaching, but when you give the teaching, bless me to be able to see it. And then I think sometimes the Lama teaches me and sometimes I even manage to hear the teaching. And then I still don't manage to pull it off. So then I ask the Lama to bless me if I get a teaching and I manage to recognize the teaching. Bless me then to be able to put that teaching into practice in my life. And then you see your teacher in front of you, and they're so excited. You know, they're like, wow, they remembered to ask. You know, so many times it's just the problem is we forget to ask. We forget to remind ourselves. So they're so happy that you asked. They're so happy that you remembered to do that. And then you see them get smaller and smaller and smaller until they're, well, as small as you can imagine, but still clear. So they're not so small that you can't really imagine what they look like. So you should still be able to see them clearly. But if you imagine them getting smaller, then that helps your focus your mind. And they rise up to the level of the top of your head. And then they come over, and they're sitting on the top of your head, and they're facing the same direction as you. And maybe you can feel a little bit of their weight or a small amount of pressure sitting there, them sitting there on the top of your head. And then they come down through your body until they're resting at the level of your heart. And if you want, you can make lotuses and things, or if you know what your lama's favorite chair looks like, you can visualize that. But they come down from the top of your head until they're sitting there resting at your heart. And then they stay there with you for the rest of the day. So if you get stressed out or upset or things aren't going the way you want, then you can just remember that your teacher is sitting there happy with you, resting in the center of your heart. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes again. Oh, there you go. Okay. And you can do a little twist. If you want to move your legs are getting stiff. You can move, wiggle your legs around. And stretch out the side body. Make space for the heart to expand. And we might do one more, but any questions about any of that? Okay. Oh, Mark.
Can you talk a little bit about taking refuge? Because there's a number of different ways to do that.
Yeah.
And you chose one this morning.
Yeah.
How we explain that to people who have a number of different levels of understanding of what that means.
Oh, sure. Oh, that's, yeah, that's, repeat day. That's Spanish. I was trying to get people in, when I was in Colombia to repeat Tibetan stuff, and I learned repeat day, so... I was talking with Tad before we started, like, I have to learn Spanish. It's so easy. Like, I have no excuse not to learn Spanish. But, I heard two questions. The first question is easier. The second question is slightly more difficult, maybe. So the first question is, what are the different ways you can think about refuge? And then the second question might be, and how do I present that to a student? Because, so for me, those are slightly different questions, because... The second question is more like the flavors of Mahamudra. You know, like there might be a student who's not ready to hear, okay, everything's coming from me, so then how do I present refuge to them? So that's a big subject. I don't know if I'll have time to say too much about that. But the first question, different ways to think about refuge. For me, there's three basic ways. Like when I do my seven limb prayer, there's three basic ways I think I can attack my refuge limb. And one way is the traditional Tibetan way to talk about your motivation, right, or the things that you need, is you have to think about the two, they call them the two wings of the bird, and they say a bird can't fly with one wing. So then, for me, refuge has those two aspects. Compassion is one aspect, and that's kind of the way I sort of took this one, because we talked about it a little bit because of the question. And then the other one, right, is wisdom. So I can approach refuge from the compassion side, like, because everything is empty, therefore I have to take care of more people. So what's my refuge? How do I go for refuge? I have to take care of people. But you could go look at it from the other side too. Okay, so how do I take care of people? Well, they're empty. So that's also a refuge, right? I can take refuge in the fact that, I guess Michael was talking about, that because this world is empty and there's nothing out there independent of me, then that means I can change this whole thing. So in the sense, they're the same thing. See, because I can't talk about one without talking about the other. But at the same time, you could emphasize more one or the other, more or less. And you could say, today I'm going to go refuge in compassion. Because things are empty, I have to take care of people. Or you could say, because I want to take care of people, today I'm going to go for refuge in emptiness. So that's kind of, in my mind, that's kind of the way I think about it. And then, of course, the third thing would be to say that if you really wanted to do either of those two things, then you need what? Somebody say seeds. Excellent. That's a good answer. And what's the best way that I plant seeds? What's the most powerful way for me to plant a seed? What's the most powerful seed I can plant? Yeah, think about your llama. Think about your llama. Right? Because I have no capacity to help other people. Zero. Anything I do to help somebody else, like the question the reporter guy's asking, I think it's a great question, because the truth is I have no capacity to help anyone. As much as I might try and help somebody, I might just end up making the whole thing worse. It's possible, right? I could teach them about emptiness, they could freak out, think nothing exists, fall into nihilism, and kill themselves. Like, there's nothing you could do, right, that can help anyone necessarily. It only depends on what seeds you have in your mind, right? So the only thing that I can do, right, is to go for refuge in my llama and think to myself, like, I have no capacity. I don't know how to help people. So can you help me help people? Because that's really the only way I could ever do it. I like to think about, I was 28, before I found the Dharma. And I try to remember what it was like, what my life was like before I found the Dharma, And I want to use a bad language. I'm in a church, so I won't. It was not good. And I was always interested in these things. I tell my friends, I say, when I was in college, I always tell this story. One time I was in college, and one of my friends was trying to talk me into going to the bar, and I was like, kind of been there, done that, Like, I don't see any purpose to doing it anymore. And I was like, he's like really putting the full pressure on me, like, come on, let's go out, And I'm like, don't you ever want to do anything else? Isn't there some other way you might want to use your time, And he was like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to change the world. And that was before I knew anything, So I was always looking for a way to do that. Like, I feel, obviously I think I must have had bodhisattva vows before, So they say your bodhisattva vows continue, like, from your past life into your present life. So I was like, I already had that in me somewhere, but I was looking around, how do I do that? If I want to change the world, how's that possible? How could I even start to think I could do something to change the world? And the answer was I couldn't until I found a llama. So if you were to say, what's the real refuge? Then I think that's a pretty good answer. Then, I don't want to take any more time. How to present that to a student is then a whole another animal, because what students are ready to hear, what they can accept, then that's a whole another field of inquiry, so maybe we can talk about that later. Yeah, because let's do one more meditation real fast. We have like 10 minutes left. So we were talking about Mahamudra. I wasn't sure what I should do. Like, I really like the Golden Room meditation. That's really good too. We've been talking about that also, but I think we'll do the Mahamudra thing since we were talking about how that can help you when you're traveling and on planes and stuff. So we'll try that one. So yeah, take your comfortable position so you're not going to move, or you know, do your best. And then let's go back to the breath again. Let's do the one we just did. So you're just going to watch the breath as it leaves and as it returns the nostrils. You know, if again, as you get more, you can get more and more subtle with this meditation. So you feel you can feel the breath on the hairs in your nostrils, and then you can start to feel the warmth or the lack of warmth from the air as it goes out and comes back, and just let your mind get absorbed in that. Okay, good. So then now Mahamudra is, you take your mind as the object. So all you're going to do is just start watching your mind. And at first, I think the best way to start off is, you're not, again, just like we're not trying to control the breath when we do the breath meditations, we're not trying to control the mind. So we're just watching the mind. So your mind's going to start to think about what you're going to eat or what you're going to do next, or about how your body feels. And you're not going to judge any of that. You're not going to say, oh, I'm not allowed to do that right now. You're just going to use your mind to watch your mind. So as the mind hears sounds, or as the mind starts to think about how your body feels, or as your mind starts to think about what you're doing next, you're just going to watch that. And then what you do is you don't follow it. So if I start to think, oh, you know, my back doesn't feel so great, I think I want to like move around a little bit, then you just say, okay, that's the mind not watching the mind. Now the mind is following the mind. So instead, I'm going to go back to watching the mind. So when a thought comes up, you watch it, you recognize it, and then you just let it go. Again, just things rise up in the mind, and you just, oh look, my mind is thinking something, and you watch it leave. And then you can start noticing that your mind will keep throwing the same things at you. Like your mind will try to get you to think about what you're going to do next. And then you let that go. So then your mind will try to get you thinking about how your body feels. So then you let that go. So then your mind will try to get you thinking about what that person said to you last night. And then you let that go. And then you can make like a little list in your mind. Like, these are the things my mind is trying to trick me with. These are the things my mind's going to try to use to get me distracted. And then with that little list, then you can like defend yourself better. Now you can recognize, oh, now my mind's trying to get me to think about what's next again. Oh, there it is again. Right? And then you can just label them as things my mind tries to distract me with. And then you'll find maybe that it's a little bit easier to let them go without thinking about them. Oh, there it is again. And then ultimately, what Mahamudra is meant to do is that if you start to analyze your mind enough, you start to realize these things. So, okay, there's just a seed going off in my mind. And when that seed ripens, it ripens as me thinking about what I have to do next. You know, okay, what does that look like? All right, now I've seen that happen enough times. There it is again. It's just a seed ripening. My mind trying to think about what I'm going to do next. And then ultimately where that's supposed to lead your meditation is you should start to realize, oh, well, if this is what's going on, just seeds ripening in my mind, thoughts as they ripen as seeds just passing through my mind, then what is the nature of my mind? What is it ultimately? With enough analyzing and enough training, then the answer your mind should come up with is, oh, the mind is empty. Can open your eyes. So I have 1 minute. Any questions about that one? Okay. Gracias.